It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, we're here every Tuesday afternoon live on Joy 620. But also, if you want to listen to past shows or listen to the podcast or listen on demand, you can at investinghope.com. You can find the podcast over at iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn app, wherever podcasts are found. You should be able to find this show. So we, again, are thankful that you are listening. Today, we're going to talk about I'm trying not to make every single week kind of focused on this, but it seems like the news of the day is pointing us in that direction. Last week, of course, we interviewed the writer and producer of Unplanned, which is the story of Abby Johnson, former director of Planned Parenthood, and that movie's coming out March 29th. They had their premiere in Hollywood last night. That seemed to have gone well, and so if you want to listen to that show, you can at investinghope.com and other places. But today what I want to talk about is looking at our current political landscape. And we have, I don't know, roughly 150 Democrats running for president. No, I'm kidding. That's obviously an exaggeration. But a lot of folks are running. I think the number is now up to 15, 16 people that have already come out and said they're running. Joe Biden is toying with the idea, and he had a slip up yesterday of saying that he is the most progressive one running, and then he corrected himself and said progressive one running that may run. And so there's a lot of things to look at there. Will Joe Biden put his name in the hat or not? I'm not sure. With the most recent news of Beto O'Rourke, or better known as Robert Francis O'Rourke, from Texas, is running. He just put his name in the hat. That may scare Joe Biden away. A lot of folks are arguing that Beto is simply putting his name in the hat because he wants to be the vice presidential candidate. But, you know, who knows how that's going to shake out. We got 2 years, but man, we're in the thick of it with everybody running. That's all the news is talking about when they're not talking about the current president. And so what I want to talk about is, I guess, ask the question, is there room for a pro-life candidate in the Democratic Party? Is there room? And we can even further that. Is there room for a candidate that would be okay with restricting abortion in the third trimester? But I think the answer to that is no. I've yet to see anyone willing to, on from the left, anyone willing to say, look, you know, I'm pro-choice, but in the third trimester, no, that can't be where we are. But it seems to me that everyone running for office at the moment, with a D beside their name, is running as far and as extreme as they can on the abortion issue. And it's concerning. And it's troubling. And I'll be the first to admit that probably most folks that listen to the show probably aren't voting for those men and women anyway. But one has to think there's a lot of folks out there in the country, a lot of evangelicals, a lot of folks that would label themselves as Christian that are wondering, well, where will we see someone from the DNC that says they're pro-life? There are folks out there that claim to be that. When I was at the March for Life back in January, there was a person that spoke at the March for Life that is a Democrat and is pro-life. There are some out there, but they seem to be being pushed out of the party. And other than that, they're not being encouraged to run for the highest office of the land, which is president. And so some people have even argued, well, Beto is the moderate candidate. And some people are excited that he is he's running now. You know, he lost to Ted Cruz in a Senate race, a very highly contested Senate race. It was really close. A lot of people thought, myself included, thought that Ted Cruz was going to run away with that. He did not run away with it. He won, but it was not a blowout. And so Beto O'Rourke got a lot of focus and a lot of attention from the media, from the party, from the party elites. And now we've been waiting, even though last year in an interview he said, I absolutely am not running. And now he's put his name in the hat. And so his name's in the hat. And then yesterday he was asked, how do you feel about abortion in the third trimester? And the interesting thing that he did, they were in a diner. He was standing on a counter, which if you've watched the coverage lately, I would just put this out there. If you're running for office, do not stand on a counter in a cafe or diner or bar where people are going to eat. Do not stand on a table where people are going to eat. It's just, I get it. You want a lot of people to see you. You want people to hear you. But get off the counters. I don't care what party you're running for. It's just kind of gross, and I don't think you should do that. But he was standing on a counter, and someone asked, how do you feel about abortion in the third trimester? And I'm summarizing here. And he looked to the crowd, and on the microphone, he repeated the question. But here's what he did. He said, the question has to do with abortion and reproductive rights and women's rights, and I believe that that should be left up to the woman. And then, of course, people cheered him, and they were happy with his answer. But what did he do there? He didn't answer the question. The question was specifically, how do you feel about third trimester abortions? He didn't answer that question. He rephrased the question to the crowd, and then he gave the, well, I believe it's up to the woman to decide. Then today in Pennsylvania, he had a chance to correct himself. And so he was asked on camera once again while he's walking the sidewalk, how do you feel about third trimester abortions? How do you feel about, protecting babies after botched abortions? And he doubled down and said, I believe that's up to the woman. You know, the interesting thing that he's doing, he's not even giving the talking point of, well, in the cases of medical, safety for the mom, I think it's only in those rare cases we need to look at abortion in the third trimester. He's simply saying it's up to the woman no matter what. There's a couple things I want to point out here. When a man, and I know that this is not an answer that a lot of the culture may like, but when a man says, I'll support whatever decision you make as a woman, or I believe that decision is up to the woman, what is the man doing? The man is ultimately not taking any responsibility for the situation they find themselves in. Because guess what? It takes a man in conjunction with a woman to make a baby. So when a man says, well, it's not up to me, it's up to the woman, or I'm going to support you in whatever decision you make, then the man is simply, just like Pontius Pilate back in the day with Jesus, he's washing his hands of it and walking away. And in doing that, he is not taking on the responsibility of the child that he helped create. He's also not protecting the vulnerable. He's also showing weakness. And so it's frustrating when I hear politicians from either party stand in front of a camera and say, well, I believe that's up to a woman, or I believe that's up to moms, or woman and her physician, or Roe v. Wade's the law of the land. You know, all of those things we hear. But ultimately what this leader is saying is, look, I don't represent everybody. I certainly don't represent babies in the womb. Who am I to say? Is that the type of leadership we want? Again, from either party. So that's what's frustrating to me. And another frustrating part is when they're asked questions, they don't answer them. And so they'll say things like, well, that's a conversation that needs to be had. How do you feel about abortion in the third trimester? Well, that's a conversation that I think was already had, or that's a conversation that needs to be had. Well, how do you feel about school vouchers? How do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? Well, how do you feel about the Electoral College? Well, that's a conversation that needs to be had. Well, you're running for office. Are you prepared to have these conversations, or shouldn't you have already had these conversations? Shouldn't we have things that we stand for and things that we stand against? But the reason that I bring this up today is there's a lot of evangelicals, rightfully so, that were jaded in this last election and not really sure what direction they needed to go, not really sure what they needed to do, and they were unhappy with the options of who to vote for. And in that unhappiness, again, rightfully so in many cases, they might have voted third party. They might have stayed at home. They, who knows what they did. But one thing that we have seen over the last year or so, especially when it comes to the issue of abortion, is we've seen some extreme positions. Now, the goal of this show is certainly not to tell anyone who to vote for or who not to vote for. My goal is simply to inform and bring about information that you may not be seeing or hearing on cable news, you may not be hearing or seeing in the paper, or however else you get your news. But the reality is now, one of the major political parties in this country, the platform is abortion should be okay in any case, for any reason, at any time during the pregnancy. And they're not even willing to protect a child if it happens to survive an abortion after it's born, viable. So if we have those that want to be leaders of this country arguing that a viable baby at 30 weeks can be aborted for any reason, that's a concern and that should bother us. And so as evangelicals, as Christians, what is going to be our response? And in the same vein, in the same way, we look at another party in this country that claims to be pro-life, that claims they want to defund the largest abortion provider in this country. Yet when they had opportunities to do so, they did nothing. You know, we have folks that claim to be pro-life that then appoint justices and judges that we are told are pro-life, and then they fall in line and continue to kick the Roe v. Wade can down the road. So are we holding folks accountable or not, regardless of what letter is beside their name? One thing that we need to agree with, again, as pro-lifers, is that matters to us. When you say you're pro-life as someone wanting to lead, whether it be locally or at a House or state level or Senate level in the state or House or Senate level in D.C. or as the President of the United States of America, we need to know what pro-life means to you. Every one of these candidates need to be asked, What does it mean to you? Should abortion be restricted at any time? They need to be on record answering that question. Now, the folks that are asking them these questions aren't the big cable news outlets. They're the conservative blogs and other folks that are doing their best to get them on record, but they're not getting the mass appeal and exposure that they need. And so we need to hold these folks accountable when it comes to where life begins and when is it okay to restrict abortion. We'll be back.
Okay. You know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you're gonna go.
So as we talk about what's going on around the country, I thought it was interesting today. Today a letter was sent out, an open letter through the Baptist and Reflector. If you are a Southern Baptist, then you know what I'm talking about. At least you know what the Baptist and Reflector is. And so there's a letter to Tennessee Baptist about abortions, and it's an open letter from the Tennessee Baptist Mission Board President and Executive Director Randy C. Davis. And I thought it was interesting because a lot of times what you find is a lot of folks don't want to touch the issue when it comes to abortion and life. You know, we want to assume and we want to think that our pastors and our churches are standing for life, and frankly, most of them are. I have a lot of conversations with a lot of folks about this issue and from staff members, leaders in the church, lay people in the church. And so conversations are being had. It's being discussed. But for an executive director for, Tennessee Baptist Mission Board president to write this open letter, I thought it was important and I wanted to share it, with you today. So he says, "Dear Tennessee Baptist, every personality profile evaluation I've ever taken identifies a particular character trait that is confirmed by my wife, family, friends, everyone I've worked with, and by everyone for whom I've served as their pastor.
I am a quote-unquote bottom-line kind of man. The Lord has taught me how to temper that trait with patience and grace when appropriate, but to employ that trait when needed. Unfortunately, we live in a, quote, bottom line, unquote, days, and I'm embracing my bottom line self. Bottom line number one, I love life. Bottom line number two, I hate abortion. Many legislators across our country are rushing to codify and push toward barbaric depths the violent practice of abortion, the evil of which has never before seen the light of day in the United States. For instance, on January 22nd, exactly 46 years after the U.S. Supreme Court ruling Roe v. Wade, New York lawmakers passed the Reproductive Health Act, and of course we talked about it here on the show multiple times as well, which is far more to do with the death of unborn children than the health of mothers. What was even more sickening than the legislation was the perverse celebration that followed. As New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed the document, the governmental body erupted in a thunderous applause over a law that now provides abortion up until the moment a baby is to be born. The governor then looked up from the signing of the hellish law and with a broad smile declared, quote, I am directing that New York landmarks be lit in pink to celebrate this achievement, unquote. It was Romans chapter 1 and 2 personified. Vermont followed suit. House Bill 57 states, every individual who becomes pregnant has the right to choose to carry a pregnancy to term, give birth to a child, or to have an abortion. The bill goes on to clarify, a fetus shall not have independent rights under Vermont laws. Now think about that. That's tough. A fetus shall not have independent rights under Vermont laws. And then Randy goes further. Alaska, Colorado, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Oregon, and Washington, D.C. all have similar laws. And in Virginia, politicians are introducing the possibility of post-birth abortions, otherwise known as infanticide. Meanwhile, New Jersey Assemblyman Benji Wimberly introduced legislation to protect pregnant cows from going to slaughter and to also prevent the deaths of their unborn. Wimberly said of this bill, it's the right thing to do to protect our animals and unborn animals. And in Toledo, Ohio, citizens have granted personhood status to Lake Erie, enabling a law that establishes for the lake the same rights as human beings. They obviously must have in mind humans other than the unborn ones. The hypocrisy of all this is painfully obvious. What about our beloved Tennessee? The fight for Amendment 1 was just a squall preceding a bigger storm. If you recall, Amendment 1 returned abortion restrictions to where they had been prior to a liberal judge reducing them to the level that made Tennessee the abortion destination of the South. Tennessee Baptist, you played an important role in the passing of that amendment, and you must play an even bigger role in the days ahead. Let's draw on our experience of cooperatively working together to make Tennessee the state more than any other that unapologetically loves God's gifts of life from conception until its determined end. Let's make adoption a process that isn't complicated or expensive, and as churches, let's support and resource couples attempting to adopt. Let's unconditionally love mothers with unwanted pregnancies by caring for them and then assisting them in finding loving homes for their babies. Let's support like never before our Tennessee Baptist Children's Home and their foster care initiative in providing temporary but loving homes for children and teens in crisis. Let's rally around courageous Tennessee state reps and senators attempting to create laws that make Tennessee a very difficult place to have an abortion. There are a number of bills being considered. Stay informed and be supportive. Let's continue to do good. To him that knows to do good and does it not, it is sin. James 4:17. Let's win Tennessee for Christ as we go. Above all else, people need to hear the gospel of Jesus. The sin of abortion begins in the heart, and abortion will only be fully eradicated by his saving grace that transforms the heart. It is a joy to be on the journey with you. Of course, that's, again, President and Executive Director of the Tennessee Baptist Mission Board, Randy C. Davis. And the reason I wanted to read that to you today is because I do believe we are at a moment where pastors and those in leadership in the church are going to have to speak out on these issues. Now, I get it. Being in ministry, a lot of times we feel pressure to speak out on a lot of different things. And sometimes pastors speak out, sometimes they don't, sometimes they choose when to do that wisely, sometimes they don't. Some pastors look at it across the board and say, look, because I'm not able to speak to every issue, I'm just not going to talk about it at all. And I'm not going to speak out on any of these issues. But I think this letter was written because we are seeing 3,000 abortions every single day in this country. You see, this isn't an issue that's just going to go away. frankly, it's just not an issue. It's dealing with actual human lives, actual image bearers. And on top of that, abortion is wrecking families. It's wrecking women. It's wrecking men. And so to act as if this is something that we should just say, as some candidates have said, I just believe that's up to the woman and her doctor. Well, church, that can't be our answer. That can't be our answer. When we look at the opioid addiction, what do? We seek remedies. We seek to fix those things. When we see people that are addicted to porn, what do? We seek to point them to something greater. When we see people that are dealing with addiction or abuse or are fill in the blank, whatever that may be, that is wrecking their life, that is wrecking families, we step in and we speak out against those atrocities and against those sins. We call people to repentance and we point them to God and we point them to Jesus and we step in and we love them well. Abortion has been a plague in this country since 1973. Before then, but certainly since 1973. And we are at a moment now where the church needs to step up and answer the call. Just like Randy was saying, we need to step up and love those that are facing unplanned pregnancies. Come around them and say, how can we help? We need to open our homes to not just foster children and not just children that need forever homes, but maybe even to a young lady facing an unplanned pregnancy. We need to open our homes to these families. Maybe some of us have been blessed with financial wealth. And maybe we need to help families adopt. Maybe we need to help young families who are struggling with an unplanned pregnancy. Maybe we need to partner with pregnancy centers. Maybe we need to put our money where our mouth is. This isn't an issue that we can just stand by and let continue. And yeah, there's a lot of ways to get involved. Maybe some of you are more politically savvy, and that's the direction you're going to go. And you're going to contact your reps and your senators, and you're going to get involved in campaigns. And you're going to go that direction because you see that through your influence and through your engagement, you can have an impact in that world, and that's great. Maybe some of you listen to this, you say, I hate politics. I can't stand politics. But you know what I am good at is loving on people. You know what I am good at is discipling, is mentoring. And I was in a tough spot at a young age, and I can come alongside a young lady that is facing an unplanned pregnancy, and I can walk with her through that. Then reach out to us at Hope. And others are going to be hearing this and saying, look, I don't have time to do any of that, but man, I can write a check. Some of you are saying, look, we're not at a place right now where we can foster or adopt. We got, you know, our kids of our own and they're young and we're just not at a place. But man, we would love to help out another family that's wanting to adopt. They need a car seat. We want to get them that car seat. They need a pack and play. We want to get them that pack and play. The norms are changing. For a long time, even after Roe v. Wade, even with Roe v. Wade and Casey versus Planned Parenthood says we can restrict abortion. And now you have multiple candidates, about 15, 16 candidates running for the president of the United States, and all of them are saying they believe abortion is okay for any reason at any point during the pregnancy, even after baby is born, there needs to be a conversation. That is a concern that we have to engage and we have to reach out to our communities, to the cities that we call home and love the people around us and engage in this process and say, no, that's not okay. We'll be back. Changes in attitudes, nothing remains quite the same. So the conversation today is dealing with really the most recent comments by a presidential candidate when it comes to abortion in third trimester. And the reason why I'm talking about this is what we're seeing now in our culture is an agenda being pushed by the left when it comes to abortion it's not just coming from political candidates. It's certainly coming from there. It's not just coming from cable news. It's certainly coming from there. It's not just coming from the abortion lobby. It's certainly coming from there. But we also are seeing this even in kind of the mainstream culture. So Hulu, there's an original series. I don't know how many watch Hulu and have Hulu, but there's an original series, and the title of the series is called Shrill. And in a recent episode, the main character had an abortion, and the response, like what she said when asked about the abortion, was she said it makes her feel very powerful after aborting her child. Very powerful. Now why do I bring that up? I bring that up because for a long time we heard safe, legal, and rare. Even up to recently, we've heard candidates and other leaders say, well, no one wants an abortion. I saw an interview just the other day where somebody was using that line of thinking. No one wants an abortion. It's just, you know, because of medical reasons, people have to get them. But here's the reality. It's the amount that are based on medical issues, like legitimate medical issues, are few and far between. And so what we have seen over the last, you know, I don't know, few months, last 2 or 3 months, starting with the governor of Virginia's comments, what we have seen is a shift of doubling down and saying, look, okay, yeah, here's what we believe about abortion. For a long time, those that would say things like this, that abortion makes me feel very powerful, or hashtag shout your abortion, or abortion should be okay at any point during the pregnancy for any reason. For a long time, those that would make those arguments were considered the fringe, the extreme. Well, that's no longer the case. And if somebody wants to argue with me on that, then I'm happy for a debate, because it seems to me that what we said was the fringe and the extreme is now the mainstream platform. It at least is with all the candidates running currently. It at least is with this Hulu show. It at least is with cable news. It at least is with the abortion lobby. That now the mindset is not only is abortion okay, but it makes me feel powerful. That's a long way from safe, legal, and rare. That's a long way from no one wants to have an abortion. When your argument and the agenda and narrative that you're pushing is saying that this actress on a TV show, after having an abortion on the show, says it made her feel powerful, that doesn't seem like someone was wrestling with that decision. When you're an abortion provider, one of the largest abortion providers in the country, and you push a hashtag on Twitter called Shout Your Abortion, that doesn't make me feel like this is something that we want to happen in rare occasions. It didn't say shout your abortion for medical reasons. It just said shout your abortion. When you're the largest abortion provider in the country and you're receiving $500 million from our government, and then you argue in a blog post and in a tweet that abortion is in fact core of what you do as an organization, after we've been fed the line for so long that abortion was only 3% of what Planned Parenthood does, but then the new president of Planned Parenthood comes out just a few weeks ago and says it's the core of what we do. Yeah, we're a long way from safe, legal, and rare. We're a long way from only when medical necessary. We're a long way from that. We are now no longer stepping into it. We have jumped into as a with some of the voices that are speaking out lately, as abortion should be celebrated. And so that's the problem that I have. I mean, there's a number of problems I have, but we are at a point now where we celebrate these things. We elevate that. And the reality is that in the celebration and the elevating of that, the vast majority of the populace, when you look at polls, don't agree with that. But again, we're being fed a narrative. An agenda is being pushed our way. You look at polls and it says, hey, should abortion be restricted in the third trimester? And what do you see? About 86% say yes. The vast majority of people say abortion in third trimester, not okay. But yet we're being sold this bill of goods that it's normal, it's natural, it should be celebrated, you should be celebrated, you're brave, and you're not going to have any lasting effects from it. I would love for some of these folks to come with me when I speak on this issue and watch the amount of men and women that come up afterwards with tears in their eyes because they're still struggling with the effects of an abortion they had even up to 40 years ago. I would love for these places and these people to sit down with a place like Deeper Still who is serving and loving on post-abortive men and women that are going through the healing process because they can't let it go. They can't shake it on their own. It haunts them. You see, we're doing a disservice to women and men when we act as if abortion has no lasting effects, even if we outside of the unborn child. I'm saying lasting effects on that mom, on that dad. So when you say you're for empowering women, this isn't empowering women. And when we make these comments, and when we say these things, we say we're empowering women and it's women's rights and all of this, and we just somehow miss and refuse to admit that even a conservative estimate, 50% of the abortions since 1973, let's just say 50%, were female. So 60 million abortions since 1973, half of those female, that's 30 million more females that would have been walking, living and breathing. You know, this is why when we have conversations on immigration, when we have conversations about separating families at the border, when we have conversations about health care, and we hear folks say that we need to care deeply about keeping families together and care deeply about children. This is why they lose credibility. You know, because in my eyes, the baby in the womb has just as much intrinsic value as anyone else walking. All four of my children had the same amount of value while they were in the womb as they do now. Just because one of them can read now and can run around on his own, he's somehow more valuable than when he was in the womb? Of course not. And no one believes that. These same people pushing this agenda are the same folks that'll go to a gender reveal party, are the same folks that'll celebrate when their friend gets pregnant, are the same folks that'll look down at their belly while baby's growing and rub their belly and talk to their baby and read books to their baby and then come out and say, hashtag shout your abortion. It just doesn't make sense. Doesn't make logical sense. Because if you're looking down at your own belly and rubbing and reading to your baby in your womb regardless of what stage of pregnancy, you are recognizing that is a life. And we can't then look at someone else and go, well, but you can do what you want to do. We can't say, well, personally I'm pro-life, but I don't want to put my beliefs on someone else. That's not rational thought. Well, personally, I believe it's a life in the womb, but they may not, and so they can do what they want to do. No, that's a cop-out. It's either life or it isn't. You want to talk about pro-science? Science tells us it's life. Science tells us that babies in the womb are picking up dialect, so they know that I have a southern accent. Science tells us that babies have their own dreams, that they're having dreams in the womb. Their own DNA. Their own organs. Their own eyes, their own nose, their own ears, their own fingers, their own fingerprints. Their own blood type. So you can't hide that fact. So that's where the debate has to start is, okay, it's a life. Science says it's a life. The gospel says it's a life. Now let's talk whether it's okay or not to dispose of that life. That's where the conversation starts. And that's uncomfortable. And certainly there's a lot of work for us to do. We live in a society that since 73 has been telling a generation that it's okay, that some life has more value than others. So we are to step into that and have the conversations that need to happen and also point people to the truth that life is a precious gift. And we're gonna walk alongside these folks in their journey and help them in that process. We'll be back. So as we finish up the show today, I want to finish by pointing you to some upcoming events for Hope. We have our banquet coming up, as always, in April 25th, and we'll be talking about that more between now and then. But April 25th, it'll be from 6 to 8. It's going to be an amazing night. The theme this year is Grace Overflows. So we want you to join us as we celebrate another year of Hope and take a glimpse into the impact your gifts have had both in and out of the exam room where brokenness meets grace and grace overflows. And so we would love to see you out there. It's going to be, like I said, an amazing night. It's downtown at the Holiday Inn World's Fair Park, and you can go to investinghope.com. You can register and get your tickets there. Tickets are free. It is a fundraising event, so at some point I will be talking and of course, we'll be asking for donations and partnership, and we would love for you to be there. Come, enjoy, have a great meal, get to meet some of the Hope staff, some of our board, also going to be hearing from one of our patients, and just excited for you to hear her story. We have kind of told her story in different vehicles over the past, 3 or 4 months through video and through a year-end piece, but being able to hear it straight from her and seeing her baby is going to be an amazing, amazing night. So we want you to be there April 25th, again, at the Holiday Inn World's Fair Park. You can get all the information you need, investinghope.com. Just click on the Get Involved tab and then click on Events, and it's right there. And, again, we would love to see you out there. So as we finish up, my goal with this show is always to bring the information that I believe is necessary for us to hear as we figure out the steps we need to take as a people to celebrate life, to see that abortion would be ended. And in order to do that, we have to know what's being said. We have to know what the folks that disagree with us, what they're saying. We have to understand, maybe not agree with where they're coming from, but certainly get an idea of where the root of their stances are. And here's the interesting thing. Just during the break, I pulled up Twitter and another presidential hopeful just tweeted that to fix the opioid epidemic, her and another senator are sponsoring a bill that would limit a doctor's ability to subscribe or prescribe opioids to someone with acute pain to a 7-day dosage, something like that. That's me summarizing the bill. And so here's the interesting thing. What do we hear when anytime we want to restrict abortion, what are we told? Well, my body, my choice. Government does not need to interfere with a relationship between a patient and a medical provider. We hear these things all the time. But what would we need to fix the opioid epidemic. It's a problem. But you notice that they're okay with getting involved in that as the government. They're okay with stepping over patient and medical provider in that case. But when it comes to abortion, you need to, the government, it's amazing to me that those that would argue abortion on demand, when it comes to abortion, believes the government, they become the biggest limited government proponents ever. The government has no say in the matter. Go away. But in every other avenue and issue of life, we need to grow the government and they need to have a say in everything. But not when it comes to a baby. And so that's where we are. And we're, yeah, as long as the Lord gives me breath and as long as I have the ability to come in here and talk about it, we're going to talk about it every single week. And if I sound like a broken record, then so be it. Because at some point, we have to speak out. We have to be bold enough to say, no, enough's enough. Is 60 million enough? Is 3,000 abortions a day enough? When is it going to be enough? And so I appreciate you listening and I appreciate you partnering with us at Hope Resource Center. If you hear this every single week and you're saying, you know, I need to do something. Well, there's ways to get involved. Reach out to us. Go to investinghope.com. Look at ways how you can get involved, helping out with mentoring, helping out with baby showers, helping out with parenting class. There's a lot of options for you. Maybe you can just click that donate button and partner with us that way. But we'd love to hear from you. We are grateful for your partnership, and we're excited to see what the Lord's going to do in 2019. Talk to you next week.
Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just ahead. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting.